Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katra AI. Welcome, everyone. Today, we're doing a deep dive into, well, perhaps the cornerstone of Western philosophy, Socrates.
Absolutely. A figure everyone's heard of, but who remains incredibly elusive. He wrote nothing down himself, which is kind of the central puzzle.
It really is. This legendary figure executed by his own city, Athens.
Right.
And we're left trying to piece him together from conflicting accounts.
Which brings us to what scholars call the Socratic problem. How do we sift through the evidence, Plato, Xenophon, Aristophanes, to find the real thinker?
Exactly. And that's why we're focusing on the work of C.C.W. Taylor. He's a renowned classicist who's tackled this very problem, trying to reconstruct Socrates as a core philosophy.
Taylor uses some really rigorous analysis to get past the myth. Our goal here is to give you the essence of that reconstruction, a shortcut to understanding what Socrates meant by the examined life.
And honestly, why does this ancient Greek guy still matter so much? Well, before him, philosophy was mostly, you know, what's the universe made of?
Right, cosmology, natural science.
Then Socrates comes along and basically changes the entire game. He starts asking, how should we live? What is justice? What is virtue? He dragged philosophy into the marketplace, into ethics.
It was a fundamental shift. And pretty much all ethical thinking since has had to grapple with the questions he first posed.
So who is C.C.W. Taylor, the scholar guiding us here?
He's a highly respected British philosopher and classicist, an emeritus fellow at Corpus Christi College, Oxford. You know, a real authority on Plato, Aristotle, the whole period.
And what makes his approach particularly good for Socrates?
Well, it's his background in analytical philosophy. He doesn't just narrate the ancient texts. He applies this very logical questioning lens to them. He's looking for coherence, for arguments.
Which is crucial when you're dealing with the Socratic problem, right?
Yeah.
All those contradictions.
Exactly. Taylor's analytical skills let him carefully peel back the layers, the satire from Aristophanes, maybe the apologetics in Xenophon, even Plato's later, more elaborate ideas to try and isolate the historical Socrates.
So it's like intellectual detective work.
Precisely. Trying to find the rational core of the man focused purely on how to live a moral life.
So Taylor's work isn't just recounting history. It's trying to get past the caricature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the eccentric old guy in the toga, and show us the revolutionary thinker.
Yeah, the one whose ideas were so challenging, they ultimately led to his execution.
Okay, so the overview of Taylor's argument.
Yeah.
How does he structure it?
He starts right with that central mystery, the Socratic problem. He lays out the conflicting evidence. Aristophanes' portrayal of him as a kind of foolish sophist.
Uh-huh.
Xenophon's version, which is, well, a bit bland, a pious, sensible, moral teacher.
A safe Socrates.
Right. And then Plato's Socrates, especially in the early dialogues, who's this relentless, brilliant interrogator, Taylor makes a strong case that this early Platonic Socrates is our best bet for the philosophical reality.
And the core idea Taylor pulls from those early dialogues.
It's pretty stunning for the time. Socrates' main contribution wasn't just asking ethical questions. It was grounding ethics in the idea that virtue is a form of knowledge.
Okay, virtue is knowledge. We'll need to unpack that.
Definitely. It transforms ethics into an intellectual pursuit. And that leads to Socrates' ultimate focus, the constant pursuit of wisdom and what he termed the care of the soul, taking care of your inner self, your character.
All right, let's get into those sources. Because understanding why it's a problem is key. You mentioned Aristophanes first.
Yeah, the comedian. His play, The Clouds, was staged, what, 20-something years before Socrates died? It's pure caricature.
Right, making fun of him.
Totally. He's portrayed as this ridiculous natural philosopher, like suspended in a basket, studying air, and teaching students how to argue their way out of anything.
Measuring gnat sounds, wasn't it?
Something like that. Utterly absurd. But historically, it tells us something important.
That he was a known public figure, even then.
Exactly. People associated him with these new, maybe slightly suspect intellectual movements, even if Aristophanes' take was just comic distortion.
Okay, then the pendulum swings with Xenophon.
Right. Xenophon was a military man, a historian, not really a philosopher. His Socrates is very upright, pious, practical, gives straightforward moral advice, almost boringly conventional.
Likes the philosophical fireworks.
Completely. Taylor argues Xenophon just didn't grasp the radical depth of Socrates' questioning. He gives us a tamer, safer version.
Which leads Taylor back to Plato.
Yes. Specifically, the early dialogues like the Apology, Socrates' defense speech at his trial, Credo, about obeying the law, parts of Gorgias. In these, Socrates mostly asks questions, exposes ignorance, rather than presenting big theories like Plato does later.
And that's the Socrates Taylor finds most convincing philosophically.
That's the argument, yes. This questioning figure, driven by a unique sense of purpose.
Which connects to his divine mission, right? The story about the oracle at Delphi.
Mm-hmm. His friend Chaerephon supposedly asked the oracle if anyone was wiser than Socrates, and the oracle said no.
Which baffled Socrates.
Completely. He thought he knew nothing. So he started questioning people considered wise politicians, poets, artisans, trying to find someone wiser to prove the oracle wrong.
But he didn't find anyone.
No. He found they thought they knew things, especially about important stuff like justice and goodness, but under questioning, their ideas fell apart. He concluded his only wisdom was recognizing his own ignorance.
The famous, I know that I know nothing.
Which isn't about being proudly ignorant, but about being aware of the limits of your own knowledge, especially on the most vital ethical questions.
And this becomes his public role, the gadfly.
Yes. He saw himself as sent by the gods like a gadfly stinging a large, lazy horse that's Athens to wake it up from its moral complacency.
By constantly questioning people.
By constantly questioning their assumptions about how to live. He did this using his specific method, the Elenchus.
The Socratic method. How does that actually work? It's not just arguing, is it?
No, it's very structured. It's a method of refutation. Someone makes a claim, like defining a virtue, say, courage is standing your ground in battle.
Okay.
Socrates then gets them to agree to other related beliefs they hold. For instance, is it sometimes wise to retreat? Yes. Is wisdom part of courage? Yes.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Exactly. He shows that the person's own beliefs contradict their initial definition. Standing your ground isn't always courageous if it's foolish.
Leading to?
Confusion.
Yes, aporia. Perplexity. The person is forced to admit they don't really know what courage is, even though they thought they did.
That sounds uncomfortable.
It probably was. But Taylor, following Socrates, sees it as therapeutic. It clears away the false conceit of knowledge. You can't learn if you already think you have all the answers. It's a necessary first step.
Okay, so that's the method. Now, what about the actual content, the positive ideas? Taylor calls it ethical intellectualism. Right. This is the real core. Socrates believed, fundamentally, that moral goodness, virtue, is all about the intellect.
Which leads to that central paradox. Virtue is knowledge.
Yes. He didn't see courage, justice, temperance, piety as separate things you cultivate through habit. He saw them all as forms of expertise, specifically the knowledge of what is truly good and evil for humans.
That's a strong claim. If virtue is just knowing the good, what about when people know something is wrong to do it anyway? Weakness of will.
You've hit the most controversial paradox. No one does wrong willingly.
Okay, this is the one that always gets me. I know eating that whole cake is bad for me, but sometimes.
Right. We call that akrasia. But Socrates, as Taylor interprets him from the early dialogues, would say that's impossible. If you truly fully knew with your whole intellect the genuine harm of eating the cake versus the genuine good of refraining, you simply couldn't choose the cake.
So if I choose the cake, I must be ignorant.
In some crucial way, yes. According to this view, you're making an intellectual error. You're mistakenly judging that the momentary pleasure of the cake outweighs the long-term good of health, or you're underestimating the harm.
So wrongdoing isn't malice, it's a mistake, a miscalculation.
Exactly. The thief steals because they mistakenly believe the stolen goods will bring them more overall good than the harm caused by the act itself, including the harm to their own character, their soul. Evil is an intellectual error about your own true benefit.
Wow. That completely reframes morality.
It does. It implies that the way to become good isn't just trying harder, but learning better. Moral education becomes paramount.
And this ties into his idea of the soul.
Absolutely. The care of the soul. Psyche. For Socrates, your psyche isn't some ghost. It's the seat of your intelligence, your character, your moral self. It's your true self.
And he thought people weren't paying attention to it.
He accused Athenians of obsessing over external things, money, reputation, power, physical appearance, while neglecting the health and goodness of their own souls, which is the most important possession they have.
Which leads to that really radical statement.
It is better to suffer injustice than to commit it.
Why? That seems counterintuitive for survival.
Because suffering injustice might harm your body, your property, your reputation, all external things. But committing injustice, Socrates argues, damages the most important thing, your soul. It makes your inner self corrupt and disordered. And the health of the soul trumps everything else.
Okay, stepping back, Taylor really pulls out some huge themes here. The first one seems obvious now, the primacy of ethics.
Yeah, Socrates basically invented ethics as the central focus of philosophy. The big questions became moral questions. How to live? What is good?
And the takeaway is that philosophy shouldn't just be an academic exercise.
Right. It's meant to be a practical guide for your life, for your choices.
Then there's the theme of intellectual honesty. We see it in how Taylor even approaches the Socratic problem.
Definitely. It's about being critical of sources, admitting what you don't know, being clear about how you arrive at conclusions. It's anti-dogmatic.
And then the big one, the slogan everyone knows, the unexamined life is not worth living.
The Socratic imperative. It's a demand for constant self-reflection. Don't just drift through life on autopilot, accepting handed down beliefs. Question everything, especially your own assumptions about value.
It's really a challenge to complacency, isn't it?
Absolutely. And finally, Taylor highlights the unity of the virtues.
If all virtues are just knowledge of good and evil,
then they can't really be separate things. They're all facets of the same underlying wisdom. A truly brave person must also understand justice, because courage involves knowing what is worth facing danger for.
So moral development isn't piecemeal. It's holistic. You become better overall as your understanding deepens.
That's the idea. It's quite demanding.
It really is. And so many famous lines come from him. Let's revisit a few key quotes Taylor focuses on.
Okay. The foundational one. I know that I know nothing.
Which isn't false modesty.
No. Taylor presents it as epistemic humility. It's recognizing the vastness of your own ignorance, especially about the most important ethical truths. That recognition is what actually opens you up to learning. If you think you know it all, you stop searching.
Makes sense. Then the line from his trial, the unexamined life is not worth living for a human being.
Again, not arrogance. It's a claim about what makes life distinctively human. Reason, reflection, questioning, that's what allows for a flourishing human existence. To neglect that is to live less than fully humanly.
And a really tough one. No one does wrong willingly or voluntarily.
Yeah, Taylor emphasizes this redefines evil. It's not about inherent badness or malice. It's an error of judgment, a failure of intellect. You choose what you think is good, but sometimes you're profoundly mistaken about what is truly good for you in the long run.
Changes how you might view offenders, perhaps. Less condemnation, more. Diagnosis of error.
Potentially. It pushes towards education rather than just punishment, though Socrates certainly believed in accountability.
And finally, I would rather suffer wrong than do wrong.
The ultimate ethical stand. It internalizes morality completely. The state of your own soul, your own character, is more valuable than anything external, even avoiding pain or death.
What's great about Taylor's analysis is that it shows these aren't just abstract ideas. How can we actually apply this Socratic thinking?
Well, one clear way is in improving ethical decision-making. If virtue is knowledge, then when you face a tough choice, don't just go with your gut or try to force yourself with willpower. Pause. Ask. What do I truly understand about the good and bad consequences here, long term? Am I acting on emotion or on reasoned understanding?
So it encourages a kind of reflective pause before acting.
Exactly. It suggests moral improvement comes from deeper reflection and learning, not just gritting your teeth.
And the gadfly rule. How does that apply today?
I think it's vital for enhancing civic dialogue. A healthy society, like Socrates argued for Athens, needs people willing to ask the uncomfortable questions, to challenge assumptions, to not just accept political slogans or conventional wisdom. We need civic gadflies to keep society from getting lazy.
Both questioning leaders and questioning our own side's assumptions, I suppose.
Absolutely. The questioning has to be directed inwards, too. And then there's leadership and education.
Using the Socratic method.
Yeah. Instead of just telling people answers, whether you're a manager or a teacher, guide them with questions. Okay, you propose this solution. What are the potential downsides? How does it align with our main goal? What alternatives did you consider, and why did you reject them?
It forces them to think it through themselves.
Right. It develops their critical thinking and ownership rather than just making them passive recipients of information.
Reflecting on Taylor's work, what stood out most to you? For me, it was the stark political reality behind Socrates' trial.
Yeah, Taylor makes a compelling case that the official charges, impiety, corrupting the youth, were, well, kind of flimsy pretexts.
The real issue was political.
It seems so. Socrates had associations with figures who were deeply unpopular, even seen as traitors, like Alcibiades and Critias, one of the 30 tyrants. His relentless questioning combined with those associations in a politically volatile Athens
made him dangerous to the status quo.
Exactly. His death looks like an almost inevitable clash between uncompromising intellectual integrity, and a society perhaps not ready for that level of self-examination.
So Taylor really presents Socratic philosophy not as some dusty relic, but as a living, breathing, practical way of taking charge of your own inner life.
That's the core message. It's an art of living focused on intellectual and moral self-cultivation.
Which leads us to a final thought for you, the listener. Something to chew on.
If virtue truly is knowledge, as Socrates argued, think about some significant positive change you've been putting off. Maybe quitting a habit, starting something important but difficult, changing a situation you know isn't good.
Is the real obstacle weakness of will? Or could it be, as Socrates might suggest, that you still lack full, honest, deeply integrated knowledge of the true good involved in making that change and the true lasting harm in not making it? Is there still an intellectual error holding you back?
Something to reflect on.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.